Hello, welcome to News Roast. My name's Hayden Prowse.
I'm Julian Rubinstein.
And today, News Roast is recorded from a field at Wilderness Festival.
It's live.
With a live audience, and it's going to be very fun. And Zoe Williams is our guest. But first of all, we've got a bit of an advert for you.
Well, it's kind of begging,
it's a
isn't
plea,
it, Hayden?
Yes.
It's a plea. It's a begging. We're putting ourselves at your mercy.
It's a begging.
You enjoy News Roast. We need your help. Please, please, can you rate and review the podcast? We only want 5-star reviews, mind, because that's the only thing that makes the difference, because it helps us get up the iTunes chart. And we are already in conversation about series 3 of News Roast. That's right, series 3. But we cannot do it without your help, can we, Hayden?
I don't know if you know, there are millions of podcasts out there, and it's a competitive environment, and we need you to review us so iTunes continues to put us high up on the chart.
Yeah, please, please rate and review the podcast. And now, enjoy the show. Hello! How's it going, Wilderness? You all right? Said, are you all right? Yeah. Good, 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 good. So, welcome to News Roast. My name is... Oh, Hayden doesn't have a microphone. Hang on 2 seconds.
Julian, you've occupied the stage for most of the afternoon.
It's an occupation.
Yeah. How are you feeling about that?
I'm kind of feeling a bit like the Occupy movement.
Is anyone sick of Julian yet, or could you do a bit more?
Yeah,
a little bit more.
So, Hayden, if people haven't seen News Roast, what is News Roast?
So, News Roast is essentially a very obvious metaphor where we invite a celebrated guest and they bring 3 courses of conversation and we masticate over those issues, a first course, a main, and a pudding or a dessert, if you will. And then we sort of digest them and hopefully shit out some sort of
we're shitting out truth,
interesting solution or some kind of relevant theory.
The truth was, I basically just wanted to meet some people and like kind of get a couple more Twitter followers, so we were like, excuse me, will you do our podcast please? And they said no.
So today
I hound them.
On our News Roast we have Zoe Williams. Round of applause for Zoe Williams.
Zoe Williams,
celebrated Guardian journalist, campaigner of all things good and proper.
How are you, Zoe?
I'm really well.
So how do you feel about... Are you a sort of Sunday roast person? Is that kind of your vibe?
Yeah, I can really get on board with a metaphor this basic. Yeah. It's definitely...
It isn't. It's not complicated.
It's not that basic.
We're pretty bottom line.
There's literally nothing I don't understand about this metaphor.
Yeah, it's really complicated.
Yeah. So it's
really?
Yeah, completely. I understand we're going to do a starter. That's going to be light. Yeah.
So what about the bit before the starter where we talk about you and your life?
This is an amuse-bouche. Where
that's the amuse-bouche. Okay, fine. We're going to do some amuse-bouching about Zoe Williams' career for a minute.
Oh, no, I don't think we're going to do
that. I think we are.
It was amazing. I mean, you know, it's not often you're meeting people. You were longlisted in 2012 for the Orwell Prize.
Yeah, no, but can we just recap a little bit? That was for a book, right, which had the shortest window of relevance of any book I've even read, let alone written. Because it came out on the 7th of April, 2015. It was about politics. Then the Conservatives got in May. Yeah. And then Jeremy Corbyn got in September, and it was like by the end of that year the situation was so totally different from what I described that anybody reading that book now would be a fool.
Is that because you're a metropolitan liberal elitist?
No. Yes.
But you've always taken, you know, a contrarian position. You're someone who basically has quite solid left-wing ideals. In 2014, you sort of defended Tony Blair's sort of policy legacy as a former Labour leader. So what was that about?
I'm down with that.
Yeah, no, that is true. Wow. How did you dig that out?
Yeah, I do some research.
No, look, I mean, I thought and I still think that the whole narrative around the Iraq war was leveraged against the people who genuinely opposed the war by right-wingers who wanted to discredit that government so completely that they didn't know whether they were coming or going. And that is, frankly, exactly what happened.
It's totally
true. But if you ever say, maybe we should let up about the war, everybody goes, 100,000 dead, I suppose you want to let up about them. I suppose you'd like to see your kid bombed, I suppose. And you're like, no.
I would not like to see my child bombed.
No, I'd like my children, and I don't think foreigners deserve to die. But the truth of it is that we kind of allowed that narrative in, and then everybody and his dog used it against him, and nobody could defend that legacy, so, ever. It's like Sure Start, Inwork Family Benefits, everything that made people's lives livable.
Every single school in the country. How do you think, because there is actually a really great legacy of the Labour Party under Tony Blair, a socially conscious legacy in terms of, like, you know, increasing VAT. How do you think that's affected the current narrative in terms of the modern Labour Party? Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
The problem was there was some good stuff that once it was taken away made people's lives a lot worse, but there was some bad thinking that made it possible for people to take it away. So I know that's a really complicated formulation, and this isn't an amuse-bouche. Jesus, I thought I understood this metaphor. This is meant to be the fun bit. But the truth of it is, you know, they basically saw themselves as interceding between the person and the dangerous corporation, and they did that quite successfully. So people on low wages did have enough to live on, but they never attacked the low wages, and that did turn out to be a massive problem.
But can I one last question on this?
Yeah.
When people say Blairite,
yeah,
in reference to politicians,
yeah,
do you think that's a constructive thing?
Oh, well, they mean it to just like cunt.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
yeah.
what they mean.
Oh, my goodness.
So I don't think you
well,
can
ever
say... Well,
the C-word's just come out already.
But they're specifically referring to Iraq, mostly.
Yeah, exactly. They're referring to kind of organised, sycophantic death. And so, of course, that's never a good thing.
I know we digress, but hey, what was that story that we always were talking about that was in The Atlantic about kind of 1970s America, post-Vietnam, this huge, huge kind of washing out of the old and in with the new, Hillary Clinton when she first got in, you know, Bill, and this idea that, you know, there were a lot of guys who basically had kind of had supported the Vietnam War, but they were against kind of monopolies, they were against kind of, you know...
Well,
banks not being kind of huge.
So you know, Johnson obviously accelerated the war in Vietnam, but he was also a massively socially conscious president.
He
rolled out loads of incredible reforms that benefited black people mostly and people of color all around the United States, and everyone forgets that because of Vietnam. There's a parallel
that
there,
a
right?
It's a really good parallel, actually, which I'd never thought of, even though...
Why, thank you.
I mean, it really is good.
I stole it from the Atlantic.
Like all the best ideas.
Yeah. So, Zoe, what we're going to talk about your starter, your metaphorical starter, but are you someone who likes starters? What's your favourite kind of starter?
I promise, by the way, that the starter isn't going to be anything like as long as the amuse-bouche. Radical departure from the way an actual meal works.
What does a socialist have for a starter?
Socialist has carpaccio of beetroot, obviously.
Carpaccio, see?
Yeah.
Metropolitan socialist beetroot.
Obviously, with walnuts.
So, Zoe, what is your actual metaphorical starter for us to digest and masticate?
I'm actually bringing, like, a personal problem to the table. No, I'm not. But there's a thing about Brexit, right?
Brexit.
Which is that... when people make arguments about democracy, and they make arguments about people they're not listened to, and they make arguments about what you would be saying if you tried to stop Brexit, I really agree with them, and find myself nodding along and thinking, yeah. I don't want to be the person who doesn't believe in democratic agency. I don't want to be the person who looks at people who feel unheard and then makes them doubly unheard. But it's still a really bad idea.
Sneeze.
It's like an incredibly bad idea.
What, Brexit?
Yeah. So...
who agrees with that?
It's this...
Does anyone here think Brexit is a good idea?
I genuinely am interested, actually. Let's see a show of hands.
One man over there.
No, it's kind of funny because it's that whole...
one man over there. Trying to stop him.
No, but this is what I mean. But maybe this is part of the problem, right? Like, in the same way that... you know, people who are going to vote Leave didn't really feel comfortable doing it.
Over there.
But this is what I mean. Like, and no one's going to judge you except for everyone. But apart from that, like, how many people... put your hands up if you genuinely are terrified of Brexit. You don't want Brexit to happen. Put your hands up. So it's about 2/3 of the 10, I guess.
Hands up if you're so drunk that you're not really that bothered.
That's just me and Hayden.
In a way, like, there's a problem. There's a problem before that problem, which is if you, or maybe it's a problem after that problem. Anyway, there's some ordering of this problem which I can't tell you.
Sounds problematic.
You can, whatever you think about Brexit, you sort of have to decide where you are, whether you're going to fight to stop it, whether you're going to fight for a good Brexit, whether you're going to just back away and pretend it isn't happening. You sort of have to decide where you are. And I, even though I'm absolutely clear on all the terrible events that could proceed from it and all the terrible nonsense that led up to it, I am totally unclear on whether my civic duty is to fight it or to make it work. See, and if we're there, we're going to be screwed because we're neither going to make it work nor fight it.
Sorry to stop the podcast, but we are here to tell you about a super cool exclusive deal just for our listeners. Isn't that right, Hayden?
That's right. We had to stop the podcast because I needed to shave.
That's right. Hayden was bearded and now is completely like a newborn child, Hayden.
That's right.
You look miraculous.
Yes, because I've just got a pack of Harry's shaving equipment. It's a relatively new internet-based shaving brand with a flexible subscription service that lets you tailor and suit your needs. And they're offering our listeners the chance to get their hands on a trial shaving set for just £2.95 by going to harrys.com/newsroast. And I've actually tested this, and no kidding, it is damn good.
It is the lick, as they say in urban sort of circles. It is really cool. We got these kits, and you have like a peppermint shaving gel. You have like, what I really like is that they have that little thing so that with the razors, if you travel, they don't get blunted.
Yeah,
because
that.
It sort of goes just over the razor blade.
Yeah.
And we are actually able to offer our listeners this kind of exclusive deal. But let me tell you a little bit about these guys, because Harry's was set up in the US around 4 years ago by two guys, Jeff and Andy, who are annoyed about constantly being overcharged for razors.
So what they did is apparently they did some research. Like any good entrepreneur worth their money, they bought themselves a factory with over 100 years worth of razor making experience, and they started their own razor company.
And since then, they've actually, you know, given over 3 million guys in America a bloody good shaving. And the amazing thing is that they've just launched here in the UK. Lucky us. So we can give you, our News Roast listeners, an exclusive deal when you visit harrys.com/newsroast and claim your trial set for just £2.95.
That's how confident these guys are that you're going to love their razors. In your trial set, you'll get a razor handle, which is available in three different colours, five-blade German-engineered razor head.
Five blades!
Foaming shave gel and a handy travel blade cover, which Joel just mentioned is the lick. All that for just £2.95. What's not to like?
So for more details and to claim your trial set, go to harrys.com/newsroast. Now back to the podcast.
Can I just come in here with a little thing? I agree with what Zoe's saying. However, you know, I watched Corbyn recently, as I'm sure all of you did. Very, very impressive in the leaders' debates, like unfiltered, speaking very clearly, actually answering questions he was asked. And he said, look, this is the biggest vote in the country's history. More people participated in it. But what I was really stunned to see him leave out of the conversation is that when you have a guy called Aaron Banks, who, you know, essentially made his money from, you know, strange kind of motor publications, bankrolling
like the Guardian, yeah.
a campaign, and we're not really talking about that narrative, it seems strange because surely, I mean, in my mind, the idea of any civic duty is to listen to rational arguments on one side and the other and then make your mind up. But if the arguments are totally false, then we surely have a bit of a problem, because we interviewed Ken Loach recently, and he was saying that, you know, there was a whole left-wing argument for Brexit that was completely left out, like Yanis Varoufakis, after Syriza had come into power in Greece, went to the ECB and basically said, look, we want a renegotiation of the deal of our bailout. And they said, look, we can't give you that, because if we give that to you, then people could be like, well, we've had a vote in Ireland, we've had a vote in Italy, had a vote in Portugal, these places that are indebted, and they've decided to go a different way. So there is a left-wing argument for Brexit, isn't there? I mean, that wasn't really spoken about.
They called it Lexit, and it didn't catch on because it was stupid.
No, I couldn't see that. Hey, what do you think?
Well, can I just give the counter-argument for a second? Because presumably everyone in this tent probably is, you know, a Remainer, Ramona, and The way I feel about Brexit is this. If you're going to do Brexit, just do it. Do a hard Brexit right now. Get out of the
like
EU
Nike.
And just do it.
Just do it.
If you don't, and I'll tell you why I say that. If you don't do that, you get like a lesser version of what we had before. We all know that. That's what's happening. It means free movement. It means paying for, you know, access to the European free market. It means all those things, but with less voting rights, right?
But we're going to be paying for access anyway, or we're not going to be trading with them. So
it's true.
It's actually quite a technical issue now. It's not really about free movement or access to the free market. It's about unpicking a kind of intricately built four decade process of the way things work. Sure. Now, I'm happy to unpick it, but if you think you can unpick it in a hard way, all you're really talking about is setting fire to it.
No, I totally appreciate that, and I agree with you, and I would love to cancel Brexit tomorrow. But my point is this.
Yeah.
The reason people voted for Brexit was because of a genuinely intuitive sense that if they did it, society would become more equal.
Yeah, but hey, listen, it's like...
Yeah, it already has.
Yeah, but it's like voting to stop climate change. You can't vote to stop climate change. You have to stop climate change.
I don't know, though.
Listen,
I think we're leaving out a couple of things here. Hang on. This is important. Okay, so Donald Trump, for instance, he was voted in irrespective of the misogyny, the racism, and this inherent stuff. So why is that, right? Is it because he went to kind of, you know, Ford factories and actually said, look, I'm going to slap loads of income tax on these cars if you move the factories to Mexico? Or was it because the voters are so disenchanted that they're ready to throw a fucking Molotov cocktail into the system?
I think you're totally undermining why people voted Brexit.
You're completely undermining
their intelligence.
But this is the best... I mean, we've decided... distilled where we are right here because it's become a conversation about who's disrespecting the people that we don't agree with.
Yeah, that's true.
And if that's the only conversation we have, we're not going to have any of our own role in what we want for our country and its relationship with Europe.
I
want to stop talking about the people I disagree with and start talking about what we want.
Can I give you an example which Jolyon's going to roll his eyes at?
I got a nice little clap over
in here. In the Middle Ages, the Black Death ravaged.
Audio description. Jolyon rolls his eyes.
In the Middle Ages, the Black Death ravaged Europe. Okay, it wiped out 2/3 of most of the population.
And I bet Stoke-on-Trent voted against that too.
Oh, there it is.
Fine. My point.
Okay, are we really doing the Black Death thing?
Yes, because
okay,
I was going to say. A result of the Black Death was people were paid more because there were fewer people for the same amount of jobs.
He's actually comparing the Black Death to Brexit.
Rents
and he's done this a number of times. We were recording with Caroline Lucas and literally she was like, what are you talking about? Do you want to kill all these people?
Rents went down.
And now he's doing it again.
Hold on. Rents went down because, you know, there's fewer people, so you can't charge people an extortionate amount for your property or your land. And a lot of people think that the Black Death basically gave rise to the Renaissance.
Well, yeah, but
there could be a similar situation in the UK. If we stop people coming in, there's fewer people, wages equalise, the bankers leave, they go to Germany, Berlin, Frankfurt, whatever, and you have a more equal society, and it gets distributed out beyond.
We just got the 5 minutes time, so I don't want to go into this in too much detail.
Exactly.
But listen, the reason for massive acts of destruction, be they war or plague or famine, creating an economy is a Marxist idea about the reduction of profit. Profit reduces over time, and then when there's a massive crash, all the kind of intricate locked-in finance that attaches to things is destroyed. People have fire sales. You start from scratch and growth goes up. It's not because there are fewer people around. And that's a lump of labour fallacy, you know. It's like when there are loads and loads of immigrants, all of them generate a need for more services and goods. So your economy grows when there are loads
of people. You know what? Can I just say, there's something that scares the shit out of me that I only just found out yesterday. So you know the guy who's on the stage earlier, James Ball? He's like lead investigative journalist for BuzzFeed, used to work at WikiLeaks, and we were talking about in the car on the way down, and I didn't know this, but as part of Article 50, if by the 19th of March 2019 we haven't agreed anything, then all 27 member states have to vote to keep us in. It's just done. Like, it's not a negotiation. It's a fucking time bomb. And that is stuff that what I didn't realize. And, you know, I'm supposed to be someone who kind of researches this for my job. What I didn't realize is that actually what we're dealing with is an awful lot of kind of party politics, which is getting in the way of a genuine attempt to negotiate something that is inherently unbelievably complicated.
Yeah.
We're not doing it. Why are we not doing it?
Well, I think for the exact reason that we don't know, the people who would be capable of doing it don't want to do it, and the people who want to do it aren't capable of doing
it. Did you see that article in The Independent?
But there
was a Brexit negotiator. Did anyone else see this article? It was like, Brexit negotiator, if you think that the negotiations are going badly, let me tell you I'm doing them, and they're going worse than you can possibly imagine. Did anyone see that?
But exactly.
I mean, it is fucking scary, guys. I mean, seriously, imagine getting a fucking visa to France. This isn't a joke.
I know.
But it's genuinely happening.
You know, all the people who knew how to do this stuff have resigned. Because they know that we're going about it the wrong way. So
I think I think what we need is a quantum Brexit.
Quantum Brexit.
So I don't know if anyone knows about this, but Theresa May has developed plans for Brexit, which she keeps in a box. And as long as they remain in the box and no one opens the box, we stay both in and out of Europe at the same time.
Oh, I love
it. But if someone does open the box, the whole of the United Kingdom becomes a cat.
So if Brexit...
That's really good. Have you used that? Because if not, I'm stealing it.
If Brexit...
Still there. Put it in one of your articles.
No one can hear Brexit falling down in the forest, does it mean it's even happening?
I think that's a different philosopher.
Yeah.
But
okay.
What I would say, and something I'm planning to do with James Ball, and I think you should all do this, let's FOI every single department in government right now about how much they're spending on the Brexit negotiations. Recently, 700 staff, 700 civil servants, were seconded to the Brexit department from other departments. 700. So there is nothing going on right now apart from Brexit in government. That's what's shocking.
But this is what's crazy, because honestly, like, you know, we've got hung parliament, right? I mean, honestly, if I'd sat here a year ago and said Jeremy Corbyn probably could be Prime Minister...
You did do that.
Yeah, you did do that. I was here.
Listen, motherfuckers, I wasn't even here a year ago.
You did do that.
The fact that you both can't even remember that I wasn't here a year ago...
The point
I'm making is, it would have seemed absolutely laughable. And now it sort of feels like, well, Theresa May is so weak. Boris Johnson is an absolute twat. As I said earlier, Michael Gove is a cunt. Let's just get a round of applause for Michael Gove.
I really hope you're listening, Michael.
Apologies to any families or people with children, but he really is. Let's go on to the main course, though.
First of all, do you like a
main course on a Sunday roast? Like, you're not a vegetarian, are you? Are you a vegetarian?
No.
So what's your favourite kind of Sunday roast?
You're not a vegetarian.
We'll get into this. Hang on.
You're both vegetarian.
I'm not. He is, but it's a big thing.
Wow.
We interviewed Ramesh Ranganathan, and he was a vegan, and he's actually made a lot of my friends go vegan, because what he said to me, and I didn't know this, was that if everyone just ate vegetables 5 days a week, we're talking about the entire global population, that would reduce CO2 emissions by 14%. Doesn't sound like much.
No, it sounds like a lot.
Listen to this. This is crazy. Is that is the same amount as all planes, cars, trains, any oil-based kind of, you know, gas-using kind of vehicle in the entire world.
So why
that is insane.
Why aren't you vegetarian then?
Because, you know what, I love my chicken. I know it's really selfish.
Bullshit, I am selfish, man.
I know.
Sorry.
Anyway, listen. So what's your favourite kind of roast?
Well, that's kind of depressed me now, because
that is true.
Yeah, I knew that.
The truth is depressing.
No, I like a Sunday roast, which is a little bit chewy, which introduces this next topic.
Okay.
Because it takes a bit of chewing.
A nice chewy. That's how you like to cook your Sunday roast.
Yeah, underdone.
Don't go to Zoe's house on Sunday.
Something a bit grey and chewy, surely.
You keep making it sound more and more beautiful.
This is the kind of lunch. That's what we ate.
This is a socialist lunch you can expect from Zoe Williams
on a
Sunday afternoon. It's something grey and chewy that's distributed fairly amongst all the dinner guests.
But at least we'll sing the red flag at the end.
Exactly.
So, So, okay. Zoe, what is your metaphorical main course?
My metaphorical main course is the basic citizen's income.
Okay, so for anyone who doesn't understand it, define that for them.
So it's defined by, instead of having benefits, which go to as a subsistence level of wages to the poorest people who don't have jobs or who have disabilities, you give everybody enough money to live on. You just give it to everybody, even children. You don't give them as much, but you give everybody enough money to live on. I know there's so much skepticism. Everybody's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Then the people who also have a job, as well as their basic citizen's income, it gets taxed back. So it actually, as a tax take, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference to your tax revenue. I mean, it makes a big difference to your tax revenue, and your tax revenue goes up, but your spend goes up. Obviously.
Can I just say, I love watching Zoe Williams working it out in her head, going,
it doesn't. Okay, so the benefit came to the kind of menu. Sorry, I'm trying to keep up the metaphor for God's sake. It came to the menu of left-wing thought via what do we do about the benefit system, because there seemed to be such a drive towards turning benefits into a kind of punitive, demonized thing, that actually the only way to make them work was to give them to everybody and then take them back from the people who didn't need them, and that would kind of revolutionize social services in not social services, the kind of social safety net in the way that it was conceived by Beveridge. You know, how do you get to a point where we share and support one another without judging one another? You have to go back to the first principles. But then it also came onto the menu from the right, who started saying automation is coming, whether you like it or not, and it is very likely that most of our jobs will be obviated. And everybody always thinks, oh, they just mean drivers, I can hardly drive. They don't mean drivers, they mean surgeons, they mean lawyers, they mean everybody, basically, apart from carers and gardeners. Everybody except people who use their hands to do a thing is at threat from the automation of their work. So if you get that idea from the right, and they say, how will people survive when there's a huge amount of productivity but very few people have work? Well, you need to get rid of the financial component of work and make sure everybody can live with or without it. And then from the left, you have, how do we rebuild the social safety net without judging one another? You arrive at this perfect answer. I know.
I mean, well, let me ask you a question, Zoe Williams of The Guardian.
Yeah.
It's all very well and good to imagine this utopia in the future where we pay everyone to just be.
Yeah.
But what about the feckless, job-shy poor who will abuse the system and spend their days getting drunk on tenants' super and having sex with their dogs? What about that?
Something tells me you're knocking this one.
Just saying.
Oh, he tickles me. He tickles me.
I mean, the thing is, there's very little evidence for this.
For the dog shagging or anything?
There's very little evidence for the dog shagging.
Well, I disagree.
The only truly indolent are the aristocratic. So we kind of have to ask them.
There's at least five or six people in the audience. Don't fucking look at me. Tarquin's going to be really
swanning around in a festival wearing Choose Love t-shirts.
But the only people don't choose.
Taking ketamine.
Can I ask you some questions about this? It's important. Because what's so funny about this universal basic income idea, which basically I think is quite good, and if I was taking the contrarian point of view, yes, you can play into the Daily Mail stereotype. But Switzerland, who have a very interesting way of using referenda, they use it all the time, they were offered it and rejected it.
Yeah,
and that's quite interesting because, they rejected it because I think that there's a feeling that underpins neoliberalism, which is still psychologically entrenched in our minds, which is that you kind of are your job and you deserve what you get. And there's a lot of psychology behind the idea of like free quote unquote money that kind of doesn't really add up to this stuff. And just to say the second thing that really, really scares the shit out of me is like, you know, if you look at the stuff in America with Donald Trump, right, it's like the working poor, the angry white man, all this stuff. Like when all the buses, all the cabs, all the manual labor vanishes because Boston Dynamics has made a fantastic robot to do it, how fucking angry do you think people are going to be?
No, but
and this is a coming storm. I actually watched that, you know, that last Batman film with Christopher Nolan with Bane, and I thought, he's coming. This guy is like, you lived so large for so long. You didn't know you had it so good.
No, I mean, so there are two different things going on there. The Swiss are bonkers. Their minimum wage is already €35,000. That's their minimum wage. But their minimum wage in Switzerland is €35,000. But what they do is they supplement, or they give all their cheap jobs to undocumented labour. So they have a huge hatred of immigrants because they're undocumented. So and then it's really hard to get an actual job because the minimum wage is €35,000. And an apple is a tenner. So they are not a great... when they make decisions in referenda, they often don't make good decisions because they've got such a screwed system. But if you look at actual where this has been tested, it was tested in Manitoba in Canada and Kenya, and actually it doesn't diminish. The only people whose workload goes down once they're given a basic income are new mothers and teenagers. That's it. Everybody else works as hard as they did before because nobody really works for money. People work for standing. They work for friends. They work to be occupied. They work to get somewhere. They work for different reasons.
People I'm not even
really
getting paid to
money.
Do this this thing.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. I'm not.
Just saying.
But I'm not.
Anyway. No, sorry, I mean, same.
No, I'm not.
Do you know what? It's weird, though, because I used to think that, and I pretty much spent most of my life believing that. And the next girlfriend that I had was very, very fucking work-driven, had gone to Oxford, had kind of, I think, been indoctrinated with this idea that you are what you make. I lived in America. I think they feel that much, much more. Like, in terms of... I think because they didn't have royalty, like, celebrities are kind of like royalty, and the idea of, like, what you become and, like, your job... Like, everyone in America was either like, oh, my God, can you say a cup of tea? Or it's like, what do you do? That's it. And it's kind of a strange thing. And I think, to be honest, I reckon all of us
what
in this audience...
What like, when they said...
Hold on a second. Hold
sorry,
on a second.
Sorry.
Hold on one second.
I want to hear
second.
Him say cup of tea now.
If I couldn't... If I was trying to chat up a girl and I couldn't
yeah,
say
exactly.
to her,
yeah.
and I couldn't say to her, "Hi, I've got a BBC, I've got a BBC
exactly
show."
It.
What
do
else
this.
Would I fucking have? This is
nothing.
Literally the only
literally
thing I've got.
Nothing.
I know.
Right,
you have to
give move on.
Careers this a chance.
This cuts
it's
right
my only
this,
line.
This cuts right to the heart of it.
And I'm that, still is, single.
Is that a lot of it?
You can't fucking TV see why, can you?
But it does cut to the
it's
heart.
Literally all it's literally all
of it. Our job, I guess, is the
business. From our job. Even if we hate our job, we get our sense of purpose
business
from it.
Division.
Even if we don't make much money, we get our sense of purpose. Even if it's low status, we get our sense of purpose. So there is a real question about how you get a sense of purpose after your subsistence has been taken care of and your job has been parceled out to a robot. This,
we've
these are
we've
real
got to
questions.
Move on, but I'm genuinely interested. Do you know in England roughly the kind of figures they were talking about?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, the opening figures were... I mean, at the moment, it looks really bad. At the moment,
weird.
The basic citizen income is not enough to live on.
A couple of tenners.
It's also too expensive.
Oh, right.
But that is because it's a very early stages of the modelling because you're having to look at housing prices and housing is screwed. So
what is living wage, genuinely?
It's a tenner, isn't it?
No, the living wage is $8.15
right.
an hour. But at the moment, the basic citizen's income that they were modelling was £115 a week, and then you'd put housing benefit on top of that. But it's not enough. So, I mean, at the moment, it doesn't work as an idea. But if you... It just needs to be... It just needs better... It just needs better...
Well, the one thing I was going to say is...
Iteration.
We're going to move on after this, but this is a great point. it's probably not.
He says.
I think under Malcolm Turnbull, when the recession hit in Australia, no, it wasn't Turnbull, whoever the guy was before. No, the woman. Anyway, they gave every single Australian citizen £3,000 and they were given that money and the idea was they'd spend it and it would boost the economy after the crash in 2009. What they did is they just stuck it in their bank accounts. So I'm not sure people always do the things with the money that you give them that you expect them to do.
I know,
do.
But
you
know, what you're talking about, right, is a policy that was predicated on spurring consumerism. And this is a policy that says, actually, we all need to consume a bit less.
But how about this? The thing is, again, going back a couple of years, if you had said to me that the idea that people would be behind nationalising the railways generally, if you'd said that to me 2 years ago, I'd say it's ridiculous. And things have moved so fast
that maybe
in a couple of years' time, we'll be looking at this and be like, you know what? It's so weird the public mood has changed. Anyway, Wilderness, are you having a good time still? Good, good, good.
Just a quick message before we continue the podcast, Joel. I wanted to ask you, did you know that when Donald Trump presses a red button on his desk, he gets a Diet Coke delivered straight to him.
That is a mad ting, but not as mad as this. Did you know, Hayden, that fish can see 70 times better in the air than in the sea?
Shut up.
It's an absolute madness.
But how about this? Did you know more species have been named after Barack Obama than any other US president?
Bro, did you know that cuttlefish have three hearts?
Shut up.
The mad thing is that all these facts are available to you
in a new book produced by the guys from QI. John Lloyd. John Lloyd was a guest on our show, wasn't he, Julian?
John Lloyd, a close personal friend of mine now.
Producer of Blackadder and many other amazing comedy shows.
Spitting Image.
Spitting Image. He does this show, QI.
Yeah. And purveyor of unbelievable facts. And with James Harkin, who's QI's head elf and presents the incredible podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. Anne Miller, who's the script writer and researcher.
They produced this book full of weird facts. And we've been reading some of them to each other for the last
few weeks. We've been playing them at parties as well. It's a great party game. And also, I'm telling you, it looks so good when you're chatting up someone. Because you're like, did you know that cuttlefish had three hearts? And they're like, no, I didn't. But I totally want to go to bed with you now.
Did you know that Donald Trump has bathmophobia, the fear of falling downstairs?
I just don't understand how they even found out this stuff. It's about like Margaret Thatcher slept for the same number of hours each night as an elephant. I mean, that is like, what are you talking
about? This is some funny shit. If you go to a party or a dinner party and you want to sound like an intelligent but also a sort of eccentric chap who's got some interesting facts at your disposal, this is the book for you. What's it called?
It's called 1423 QI Facts to Bowl You Over, and it's available from the 5th of October in any reputable bookshop.
Not the bad ones, though.
So, we're going to go on to our saucy dessert. We've got no idea what we're going to talk about. We could crowdsource it. Have you got an idea? Yeah, or should we ask them?
I wouldn't mind crowdsourcing.
So, we're going to crowdsource our dessert.
Hold on. Let's just do a straw poll for a second. No. Jolene and I have this thing.
Oh, no.
Creme brulee or bread and butter pudding?
Okay, hang on.
Everyone from
creme brulee. Whoa, this is important to me. Okay, the point is, he calls it...
This is serious.
He calls it... Pudding. And I call it dessert. Fair enough.
Who says dessert?
Put your hand up if you love creme brulee more than bread and butter pudding. Fuck, man.
Put your hand up if you love bread and butter pudding more than creme brulee.
I reckon you...
Yes, that's a win.
Hang on, let's do it again. It's close. It's close. Someone else judge it. Zoe, you're going to be the judge.
We need Jonathan Devlin.
Okay, let's just do it. One more time. If you love creme brulee more than bread and butter pudding, put your hand up.
If you love bread and butter pudding more than creme brulee, stand up.
They're the same. Bread
and butter pudding.
I think creme brulee is the winner.
Okay, so
the general idea of the dessert is it's something a bit frivolous. We've talked about, is Kanye for real? We've talked about, will box sets never end? This isn't supposed to be majorly political. Who's got an idea for our dessert?
Better be good.
No pressure, guys.
It's really unfair to
literally not one
person. Anyone got a good suggestion?
Talk about it.
Choose love.
Okay, this young lady here.
Does George Osborne want Jeremy Corbyn to be prime minister? Because I think he does.
Oh.
Why would he want that? Why would he want that?
On the Mars show, and he looked the happiest I'd ever seen him.
That is fucking nuts. Does George Osborne?
Can she explain that? Can she qualify that? Why would he want that?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Well, he fucking hates Theresa May. Can I just say, Hayden gave George Osborne a GCSE textbook because this motherfucker, the architect of austerity, doesn't even have A-level maths.
Wow.
That's so true.
I've got a funny story about George Osborne as well, is that when he became editor of the Evening Standard, he didn't know how to edit a newspaper, no shit.
Weird that.
Because he'd never done that before. But he seems to have just gone to the production editor and gone, how do I do it? So I worked there in the 90s. And literally everybody I worked with in the 90s got the call, apart from me. Do you want to come back and be cartoonist? Do you want to come back and be letters editor? Do you want to come back and be diary editor? He's repopulated it with the brainchild of Doug Wills, who's this like 60-year-old guy who was there in 1996.
So why do you think you didn't get the call?
Well,
let's talk about that.
I genuinely don't think he would pick me out of a lineup, George Osborne.
But honestly, what was the atmosphere like with journalists when that was announced?
Apparently he sits in the back bench going, headline, two words, one word. Two words or one word. And then everybody goes, it's one word, George.
Thanks,
that's great. They say apparently it's like having a really, really wealthy intern in the office.
Oh my God, I love that idea. Jesus Christ.
That's what most of the production crew
does
say.
Does everyone know this as well, that George Osborne is the sort of grandee of Osborne and Little, which is an incredibly wealthy wallpaper company?
I'm also worried that the person who asked that question is leaving, and I think she's a plant.
Oh...
No, I'm joking.
That is the most wilderness excuse I've ever heard. Angela Rayner's just made me pulled pork. I must leave. But it is weird, isn't it? I mean, the thing for me that fucked me off the most is the idea that it's like there was a...
Hold on, Joel. Can we talk about Osborne's remortgaging of his home for a second?
Yeah, that's important.
People forget this, right? Osborne owned his home outright in his constituency in Cheshire, right? When he realised, becoming an MP, that he could get expenses for his second quote-unquote home, he remortgaged his home. He took a loan out on his home that he already owned, and he got us to repay the fucking interest repayments. Can you believe that? A guy who owned his own home, obviously MPs, you know, the laws for MPs say that you have to have a home in your constituency and a home in London. That makes sense. But if you own your own home and then you remortgage your home to get £400,000 in cash and we pay for the interest repayments, that is theft. Yeah. That is absolute unadulterated fraud.
It is.
And the fucking guy became Chancellor of the fucking Exchequer. But don't you think it's insane.
But don't you think this is kind of at the heart of it all, right? Like, there's this weird thing that runs through...
Sorry.
No, I loved that. I thought it was good. I got a hard on.
He should be in prison for that.
The thing that I find really bizarre about the society that we currently live in is that I do... Look, I know that I'm... centrist, left-wing, like liberal elitist, but I feel something happening post Grenfell, post the election. Like, there feels like this shift where people are like, it's so transparent, the bullshit. Like, I feel like, I'm sure everyone here feels that too, but for a long time we felt completely powerless, and now there's some kind of like agency that seems to be taking up. How have you experienced this, or what's your take on the kind of current status quo of this?
I've got to say about the election that I was working really hard for a Progressive Alliance before the election, and everybody was like, oh, this is such bullshit. Somebody in The Guardian literally put their fingers to their temples.
No way. Someone in The Guardian being really weird and arrogant. Fucking weird.
In one of the comment meetings, put his fingers to his temples, looked to the ceiling like, Lord preserve us from this asshole, and said, there's going to be a Tory landslide unless the unicorns ride in and save us.
Would you like to say who that was?
I really would.
It's quite fucking crazy that the unicorns saved us.
But so basically, I don't think it was... the reason I take such a lot of heart from the result is that everybody keeps saying we're back to two-party politics. I don't think we are. I think everybody gathered in an anti-Tory alliance. I think it was a Progressive Alliance result. And I always said, if the Progressive Alliance does anything, it will look like a much less bad defeat for the Labour Party than they were expecting, and annihilation for everybody else. And that's what we're looking at.
But you know what? Taking the contrarian point of view, I genuinely believe that if Theresa May had actually done a leadership debate, she probably would have won outright.
No,
because, you know, I'll be honest,
so
listen,
Corbyn,
obviously she was terrible. The manifesto, the Labour manifesto, was great. I don't personally believe that was generated by Jeremy Corbyn. Like, I don't think...
Let's ask, who voted Labour at the last election? Put your hands down if you... How do I do this? If you in any way thought that voting Labour meant Remain in any sense or form.
That's really interesting.
Did you vote Labour because you thought it meant Remain in some sense?
That's quite an interesting
one. Hands up if you voted Labour because you thought it meant Remain.
This is some weird fucking question.
Okay.
The point is that Jeremy Corbyn, that Jeremy Corbyn is refreshing because it is quite straight up. But for me, and being honest, I find it really depressing. Where are the young leaders? Genuinely digital, not analog?
I don't know, Johnny. Where are they? I don't know, Johnny. Johnny badly wants to run for an election.
Oh, shut up.
He does.
Well, there's nothing stopping you.
You should.
Apart from fear itself. No, listen, I think the thing is about the situation...
I mean, your left-wing credentials are impeccable.
But it is a bit unprecedented.
Your hair is fantastic. Your beard is magnificent. I mean, people would vote for you on looks alone.
I'm really sorry about this.
They would.
Do you know what? Just so you know, I've known him since I was 8 years old. So this shit is just like, this is how it rolls standardly. But I got quite nervous about this before we came on because I love Zoe and I want to talk about it. And he was just like, let's just fucking have a beer. Which we did. So the thing is, I'm interested to know, like, let's just put our hands up here because I'm genuinely intrigued about this. Who thinks, put your hand up, that Brexit is going to happen? Put your hands up if you do think it's going to happen. Hang on. Hang on, let me just genuinely take this in. So there's literally less than half the audience.
A lot of them think it, but they're putting their hands up
so
like that.
So put your hands up if you think Brexit is not going to
you
happen.
You have to put your hands up properly.
No, really go for it, come on, because a couple of you are pussying out. There's people like, I take the fifth.
Yeah.
Put your hands up if you think breakfast means breakfast. Fantastic.
It
really
weird,
does.
Though,
breakfast actually does mean breakfast, so that's good.
Zoe, do you think Brexit is actually going to happen?
Well, this is it. I think we're at a cliff edge ourselves, all of us. And because it's not just about what we can each do individually. There is a moment when the mood changes and everybody knows that the mood has changed. But we are all the mood. So...
But
I think we're on a cliff edge because we don't know whether to fight it or ameliorate it. And until we make that call... We're always going to be railroaded by idiots. That's my feeling. That's my honest feeling.
Zoe, which way did you vote in the referendum? I'm just curious.
She takes the fifth.
I worked really hard. I don't work very hard.
Which way did you vote? Well, I worked very hard for me.
It looked hard. Looked hard from my point of view. On kind of good Europe, which was this kind of... You know, painting an amazing picture of what an amazing Europe would look like. And we failed. We absolutely failed.
So this is, I want to ask everyone here actually, because I went to Hay Festival recently, which is a very
highbrow
festival. I don't know if you know about it.
Yeah,
I went to a lot of talks, Stephen Fry.
Yeah, I saw Stephen Fry.
Various other people.
Like really amazing.
Anyway, so I went twice and... It struck me while I was at Hay Festival, which is full of some incredible
just
speakers.
Just how intelligent
it
I was.
No, this is, on a serious point, on a serious level, this is what struck me. The amount of brain power and also money that was there, it's like a very upper middle class festival, right? The amount of brain power that's there, people that write for, you know, your publication, every other publication under the sun, people that write books, people that make TV shows. How is it that this... Every single one of them failed so abjectly
in selling the ideas
of modern liberal
I think it's because this stuff does
sensibilities
become,
in terms of Brexit and everything.
I'll tell you a conversation we had
it
before.
Failed. We've all failed.
I'll tell you a conversation before we had before the snap election, which was I was talking to some young people like yourselves.
Young people, I'm fucking 36.
Some kind of techies. About how to do an anti-Tory alliance. And we're all like, we should get some celebrities, we should do this, we should get Gary Lineker to tweet it, we should get, you know, that guy looks like a lefty. Can't we just get him to break his BBC contract and say he's a lefty? And actually, the anti-Tory alliance didn't come from any of those people. And it just doesn't come from those people. It comes from beneath. It just and so you have to ignite all you can do. You can't make a perfect case that everybody agrees with and they follow you. You have to create the structure in which people can make up their own minds. Right. And Leave created that structure and Remain didn't. So we didn't create a number of narratives which dovetailed and all made sense.
So how do we do it?
Well, it's, you know,
we didn't
lie, and they did lie a lot towards the end, but they created take back control was a genius thing because it's like, what does it mean? But it sounds really good. Sovereignty, a lot of people said, my parents voted leave for a reason that I've never heard them use in the 45 years I've known them. You know, these were all ways in which you give people something kind of vague enough, but powerful enough that they can make their own story, and we didn't do that. And I think we could have done that, but we didn't.
Wilderness, thank you so much. I've been Jolly and Rubenstein. This is Hayden Prowse. Let's hear it for Zoe Williams.
Zoe Williams!